throughout the year, the community can be aware that a child is a military dependent and may need a little bit of extra attention. My son is 20 now, and he's moved to 10 different states. His senior year, he's been to 3 high schools.
Hello, Humanity First community, and welcome back to the Leading for Children podcast. I'm Julia Connolly, show producer and Leading for Children's Development and Communications Associate. At Leading for Children, we believe that every child deserves to grow up in a thriving community, in one where they're seen, honored, and uplifted. Fostering such communities begins with recognizing the diverse experiences that shape them and ensuring every voice has a place in the conversation. Military children are a vital part of this landscape, as they navigate constant transitions, uncertainty, and often unseen sacrifices. As families leave behind friends, routines, and a sense of stability, we as adults carry both the responsibility and the privilege of walking alongside their children with care and intention. In honor of April, the month of the military child, today's episode features 2 incredible members of our Humanity First community, Kiowana and Shannon, whose stories offer a powerful window into the lives of military families, the challenges they face, the resilience with which they face them, and the relationships and connections that make it all possible. I'll let them introduce themselves.
My name is Kiowana Phillips. I am a Human Resources Sergeant Major in the United States Army. I joined at a young age. I was 17 years old. We are currently stationed in Fort Knox, Kentucky. I'm married to another Sergeant Major in the Army, and we have 3 children and 4 dogs. We are a dog family for sure. So we like spending time with the dogs, traveling, and just doing outdoorsy things.
I am Shannon Newman. I am located in Central Arkansas, and I am a member of the Leading for Children team. I am a wife and a mother and a grandmother. Soon to add a new baby to my grandmother repertoire, so I'm excited about that. And I am related to the military community through my husband, who's been a service member since he was 18 years old.
In this first segment, we'll hear about the unique paths our guests took toward becoming members of the military community. Kiowana reflects on her experience integrating military and family life. Shannon shares how her introduction to military life came later on, when she met her husband, an active duty service member, and stepped into a very new and unfamiliar world. Through their stories, you'll see how each path into military life brings its own learning, strengths, and challenges.
It has been just a blessing to go to different places and learn a lot of different things, discipline, different backgrounds and cultures, and just the diversity of the Army. The transition was definitely challenging, great in the sense that the military provides great resources for families with children ranging from newborns to adults that still live with service members. Definitely challenging. I would say most of the challenges are just the relocation all the time and having to start over no matter what the child's age is. And for the parents as well that are in the military and the spouses that are not, it's just the challenge of relocating and starting all over in a new place, as opposed to families with the traditional upbringing. They get to stay there, you know, like I did. I grew up, same elementary, middle, everything.
When I was kind of welcomed into the fold of the military community, my 2 children were already older in age. One was in high school and the other one was in junior high. And my husband-to-be had a small child. And one of the first conversations we had, I asked him what he did for his profession, right? As you're getting to know someone. And he said, I'm a soldier. And I laughed and I said, well, what else do you do? And I was at, you know, an older adult age and was very ignorant that somebody had a job as a full-time service member, that you didn't just go and be called right at certain times or, you know, like National Guard 1 weekend a month or something. And so I was brought into this community not really knowing a lot and having children that then also didn't know a lot. And so whenever we moved together, learning about the military community and kind of enveloping children into this community and a way of being that they weren't familiar with was very, very new. And I think probably a different transition than perhaps being like born into the community. So definitely, I believe the community offers a lot of supports for families and the children. And I think it is really our outside communities that don't always recognize those children and the service that they are doing.
I completely agree, because if you weren't brought up in a military family or don't have anyone that's close to you in a military family, you don't really know what to expect except for what we see on the news or, you know, what you hear about it. My uncle was a service member in the family. And once you're in the military family, it just opens your eyes to a lot of different things, because there are different systems that you have to be on as a spouse, a dependent, to ensure that you're getting all the coverage and benefits and support that you need while being a family member of a service member.
We've turned our focus to the experience of military children and their families for this special month of observation. Although, as Kiwana and Shannon will share later, showing up as caring community members requires a commitment that transcends chosen timeframes. But in this month of April, practices do look a bit different. In the next segment, our friends will share about how the month of the military child is honored in their communities.
For us, it varies from where you're located, because not everyone that's in the military is located on a military installation and receive the support that someone on an installation received. It's much, much harder when a family is located in an area that is not close to a military base, then they can receive that support. So the month of the military, April, may look different. Like, we're on an installation now, but we've not always been on an installation. So this month, yes, we're doing all the programs, and the installation has these parties and these gatherings and all the celebration for military children. But when we were in Arizona, we weren't on a post. So that was something we had to celebrate internally, kind of like a family celebration, just because the teachers weren't aware of that because it wasn't a military populated area. So it looks different every year, depending on where the family is located.
In our community, I think because we are located next to a base and a camp, although we're outside of those towns, I think there's a lot of military families that live off of those bases. And so the schools are aware of that. So activities will happen at the schools, right? There's like Purple Shirt Day, you know, one day a week and things like that. And so what you're saying resonates with me, that it kind of depends on the community or the environment you're in, right? If they're very aware that this is even happening, or perhaps there are children in communities where their family member might be deployed or this or that, that those schools are not even aware that those kiddos are struggling through that. So I think it's important that awareness gets spread so that we can wholeheartedly say in all of the communities, children are being celebrated for this month.
Next, I asked Kiwana and Shannon to share some of the most powerful ways that communities can uplift military children, and here's what they offered.
Throughout the year, the community can be aware that a child is a military dependent and that they may need a little bit of extra attention. They may be moving for the sixth time. My son is 20 now, and then MJ is 11. But Caleb, who's 20, he's moved to 10 different states. His senior year, he's been to 3 high schools. So I think making educators aware of the child being a military dependent is going to be huge, because that could be constant communication, maybe monthly check-ins, like, hey, it's Veterans Day, how are you celebrating? You know, Caleb had to make friends over 10 times, as opposed to someone who gets to go through all the school years and grades with the kids. So I think those monthly check-ins and just understanding that, hey, this is a military child and they're going to experience things a little bit different than other children. And how can we support not only the parents, but the child as well?
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree. I think one of the most powerful ways is to not let it be that we're honoring and supporting children in a month or in a day or a week, that it's something that we are recognizing and aware of, and that we're really seeing the children, their adaptability and their emotional strength and resilience that they have, acknowledging sacrifices that they're making when a parent is deployed. Or, I mean, you probably know this as well as I do, that sometimes you're not deployed, but you're gone all of the time anyway, to schools or trainings, or, you know, now we have to go here. And so really seeing those children in the environment that they're in and recognizing those strengths and giving them that recognition. Because while an average teenager might be going through all of the stress that we know they go through, social media, bullying, and friends, and how do I act? How do I become this human in this body that I'm in? And military children on top of that also have a lot of sacrifice that they're making.
The first step to creating more inclusive and supportive spaces for military children is recognizing that they're there and that they're different. In the next part of their conversation, Kiawana and Shannon reflect on how important it is for educators, caregivers, and community leaders to meet military families with understanding and intention. They speak to the power of being known and how small acts of listening, flexibility, and partnership can offer a much-needed sense of home.
I always revert back to Arizona because that was a location that we were stationed in and we weren't around an installation or a base at that time. So it was very important for me, for Caleb's teachers and MJ's teachers to understand that we are a military family and that some things may require a little bit more time, especially if I had to go away for weeks at a time or if my husband had to go to a professional military development course or something like that. The communication with the educators was very, very important. And Caleb, my oldest, had an IEP, so it was very important just to keep that communication and understand, like, these are some extra stressors that we're having on top of being just a kid, because kids have stressors that we may not realize, but military children have extra stressors. So just communicating that with their teachers and medical providers, that was a huge one. I had this binder that I used to carry from every duty station with all of the doctors, because we have to start over everywhere you go and you have to tell the same story over and over again. So just having that support from the community there and them understanding what we're going through was very, very helpful.
When my youngest daughter was in elementary school, at her school, the counselor set up a group that was military children that came together once a week and talked about, like, what's going on at your house? Is your dad home? Is your mom home? You know, what are they talking about? Are you stressed out, right? And during that time, my husband was actually deployed. And that was a safe place for my daughter to go and show up, because while even the adults in her environment may not have understood, those other kids did. She had a peer support group because that counselor was willing to see outside of kind of their traditional box and create that peer group for her and for those other children. And I think that speaks to that adaptability we need in adults to meet them where they are.
That's awesome, Shannon. And I think that should be something in all the communities, just because as parents, we try as much as possible to assist, but sometimes it just takes them being around other kids who are experiencing the exact same thing. And then there's that relatability with it and they can open up, maybe become friends, but they definitely have a commonality of what they're going through. And having another outlet, I would say, at school, like, some communities offer in-school counseling because sometimes they don't want to talk to parents. I know my kids don't want to talk to me all the time, but they do have some kind of resource person at their school to talk to, or some kind of outlet.
Yeah.
When others put our humanity first and treat us with kindness, empathy, and respect, we all feel better. And in those safe spaces, when children feel empowered to reveal who they are and what they need, we are empowered, too, to learn how best to show up for them. Amidst constant change, as Kiawana and Shannon have described, it's essential that their home environments offer a sense of groundedness, connection, and belonging. Next, our friends share how they've prioritized this experience in their homes, even and especially in the face of challenges.
We can't parent the same to every single child. We just can't. Our children are different. So ensuring that us as parents have a good relationship with them and we're always encouraging them. Again, life happens and there's waves and different moves and everything, but just always instilling the importance of who they are, who they're going to become. You know, we have different traditions. This one specific tradition that we started like 10 years ago of this glass jar, and anything that have made us happy, like we made our favorite meal or we went to the movies, Caleb got an A, MJ got honor roll, whatever it is, we just write it down and put it in there. And at the end of the year, we open it and relive all those moments, no matter how small or big it is to each other. And not all of them are happy. Some of them are just like tough times or challenges or a change or something. So it's just something to reflect on, like, oh, I remember that. But I think having a good foundation at home is very important, because they're already going to feel isolated when it comes to being a service member that are not around other children like themselves.
I think for us, something that we've done is trying to kind of harness superpowers, right? If your passion is music right now, then how can we support you in that? You want to play a sport? How can we support you in that? I remember my middle daughter was like, you know what I think I want is to try a greenhouse. And so we're like, okay, how do we get an inside greenhouse that can travel, right? That she can take around with her. we try to find what they're very interested in and create ways that that can follow them throughout their life so that they have something. Maybe they're not feeling connected, you know, in the school that they're in or in the environment they're in, but they have something that they can focus on, that they can bring along with them. And I think that's a strategy that has worked for us.
I like that idea. We call that joy multipliers because not every kid wants to play sports. They don't. Maybe they just want to collect rocks or do this or do that. So whatever they like and they're interested in, how can we ensure that, you know, you have the best experience with that? I love that idea, Shannon.
I think humanity first really is resonant whenever the rigidity of the process can be moved over and what the individual needs is highlighted. And I think with the military, there are a lot of systems and supports in place that are structured. And it's that individual human interaction that brings it into that space where it's like, oh, I'm being seen. This is here to support me. I can use this and it's available. So I think it's whenever the human on the other side shows up for us in that environment in a way that we can let that held breath out and go, oh, there is help. We are here. We are safe and can enter into a calm interaction.
There's certain things that we as parents shield our children from also, but they feel tension. They can feel when we're stressed. They can feel when we're going through things. So sometimes it's good to have conversations when everything is not okay. Like, okay, we have to move again. I know we just moved 2 years ago, or sometimes for us, it was like, I know we moved 10 months ago. We have to move again. But what's the positive side? Where are we going? What can we look forward to in that time? We have to have those open and honest discussions and pull them into those because we have to understand how they're feeling. How do you all feel about moving again? Oh, you don't like it? Okay, well, hopefully this is the last time, but we're prepared. And at least we're all together. Like, that's a great thing. So we can't go through the decision-making process when it comes to the kids and not get their opinion because they feel a lot better if they're included when it comes to the changes with the military.
I think we give space for their agency whenever we include them in those harder conversations. Of course, as you pointed out, when they're children, it's not like we're just going to give all the down and dirty details. But I think something that I experience is military children are often very practical, right? I'm not saying that they control their emotions more efficiently or that they don't have all of the same things, but there's a little bit of a practicality that when we move, we have to pack and this is the process. You know, when mom or dad have to go away, they have to go away. Like there is no amount of fit throwing or crying or I'm not putting my stuff in a box will not change the outcome. And I think because they live a life of that experience, that there's a practicality in them that can be nourished into a lifelong skill of getting through hard things. I'm thinking, man, as community members, even as children, those are traits, those are skills that we want to be modeled and to be used. And I'm thinking there's a whole society of kiddos out there that can volunteer and that can be called into these places that maybe aren't being recognized that have these skills that could really be beneficial to the communities that they're in. And I'm wondering, how do we invite communities to even think about that, right? To bring them out of those programs that they have in school and this and that, and really let them be superstars in the communities.
At LFC, we believe that communities thrive when they're empowered by the wisdom within them. It's all too common that voices on the outside lean on assumption instead of looking to the lived experiences and insights of those who are actually affected. In this next segment, Kiawana and Shannon advocate that leaning on one another and co-creating support systems is crucial for military families.
A recommendation for the communities and different programs and agencies out there is to ask if someone is part of a military family, because sometimes teachers don't know that. Unless something happened where maybe a parent showed up in uniform one day to get them early for an appointment. They're like, oh, your mom is in the military? So sometimes they don't know. So ask the child or have a space on a questionnaire or a school form. Are you in a military family? Something like that. Then that can start the conversation of, do you have everything you need? You know, is there any resources we can provide? Have somewhere to capture, is someone in a military family to provide those resources and support?
Yeah, agreed. And I think inviting military family members in and inviting them not only, you know, just so they have a seat at the table, but really, you know, hearing them and valuing the input that they share. Because I think it's important to engage all differences because, you know, even within military families, their experiences are so different based on rank and what branch they might be in, and their input is different. So ensuring that military family members are represented in those school communities for sure, on those PTAs and PTOs, to go show up at your school board meetings and speak out, you know, it's April, what are we doing here? Little steps, little voices can still be powerful.
I definitely second you on that, Shannon, on the being present in the decision-making and inviting military members to be present in those decision-makings, because whether it's one student in your school or 100 students in your school that are dependents of military members, like that makes a difference, and their voice matters as well.
Agreed.
Now, I know one thing for sure, that no matter where you go, there is a Facebook group for that area, for military spouses, military. So there has always been something for us to reach out, and there's like, hey, where do you guys go for dental? Where do you guys go for this? Where do you guys go for that? I love the support of the Facebook groups on social media that we can go to in the communities to provide so much support. Once you know where you're going to be located, I would be reaching out to the installation to find out if they have any resources or support groups already in place, because most of them already do. Because I'm pretty sure whoever the person is out there, you are not the only military person in that area. I promise you. There may not be a lot, like a heavy military populated area, but you are not the only person in that area. You just have to find your people.
Right. Be brave enough to reach out.
Yes, because you don't want to struggle alone. Like, there's so many resources and things out there, but don't ever struggle alone.
I would second that. As someone, again, that came into the military community later in life for many years, I was hesitant to stick my head up and go, wait, I'm part of a military family and my children are experiencing this. I had this idea that we suffered alone in this, right? That it's not a shared burden, that being part of the military and a service member, you are very strong and you are capable. And as a wife and a spouse, I needed to be very strong and capable as well. And that needed to flow into my children. And it took a little while to realize, yes, we are strong and capable, and reaching out to our community and reaching out for support did not change that.
I wholeheartedly agree. We're going to be strong and do what we have to do for our families and support, but we also need assistance. We need a little help over here.
Instead of calling every dentist in the state, it would be nice to only call the three that might take my insurance.
Yes, exactly.
Thriving communities are those that uplift every child every day, not just during one designated month. Listen as Kiawana and Shannon discuss the importance of committing year-round to uplifting military children.
We discuss the celebrations and inclusion of military children in April, but we also remember and include them in different things throughout the year as well. Ensuring they're seen, ensuring that the community understands what they're going through, showing up for them in a way that they can understand, because they're experiencing things that other people are not necessarily experiencing. There is a huge support group for them out there. Our communities are available and ready, you know, to welcome them with open arms in whatever way possible in the different organizations throughout the year.
Resilience isn't built in isolation. It's really built and nurtured in relationship. And when military children are being relocated and moved, it's important that we are building that relationship and sustaining it with them. You know, they are the kiddos. So as the adults in their ecosystem, reach out to them, right? Like a high five down a hallway can mean a whole lot to a kiddo.
Yes.
I think April is a snapshot. And on May 1st, right, it doesn't mean that they disappear or that their needs change. So
right.
Just remembering past this month to see them and hear them.
In this conversation, Kiawana and Shannon have reminded us that the resilience we often associate with military children doesn't appear by accident or luck. Through their distinctive experiences, the challenges, and the victories, these children grow into their resilience. And it's our responsibility as the adults in their ecosystems to notice it, to let them know we see and appreciate them, and activate our curiosity, offering them the opportunity to exercise agency as they find themselves. Kiawana and Shannon have emphasized that honoring military children isn't solely about awareness, it's also about taking action. It's about creating spaces of belonging, connection, and support so that through all of the changes, they feel grounded in their shared humanity and rooted in their relationships with one another. So whether you're an educator welcoming a new student into your classroom, a neighbor introducing yourself to a new family on the block, a parent or a grandparent of a military child, or truly anyone holding space for a story, you have a role to play. We're so grateful to Kiowana and Shannon for sharing their stories and reminding us that when we prioritize relationships, listen deeply, and lead with humanity first, we can create a more connected and compassionate world for military families and for us all. To hear more stories and conversations like this one, be sure to subscribe to the Leading for Children podcast on your favorite streaming platform and turn on notifications so you don't miss what's next. And if you're not already on our mailing list, head over to leadingforchildren.org to sign up for updates about our national conversations, blog posts, and more ways to stay engaged with the Humanity First community. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your commitment to shaping thriving communities for children. Wishing you optimism. Till next time.